if you just go on the public, on the property appraisers, and just start going down the, we own a lot of land. This is a lot of land that remains public into perpetuity. So it's a great thing. It's like having our own state park, city park. I mean, that's what we have essentially made, is a perpetual park here forever.
I think it's the largest, or at one point was the largest city park in Pensacola, and I'm sure it probably still is. So I was just thinking what you were saying. It's when you look at it on the map, people get surprised at how big it really is.
That's city council members Jen Brer and Casey Jones at the city council meeting on Thursday talking about Bay Bluffs Park and how big it is. And I did the Jen Brer challenge. I went on the property appraisers map and looked it up. Oh my God, it's huge. It goes all the way from Summit down to like Mallory. It's enormous, that stretch of property. So, you know, it kind of made me think, well, you know, what could Bay Bluffs really be now that we're kind of going down this path of figuring it out? Joining us now, we have Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you. So I know people have been talking about, you know, probably not going to have the scaffolding like we had before or have now, and it's dilapidated. Maybe not just a full primitive path kind of thing. But, I mean, that comment really got me thinking about, you know, what could be with this giant stretch of land that is maybe the largest city park potentially. You know, I mean, I think of the, you know, Greenway projects that we have possibles, and, you know, other cities and what they do, and Central Park. And I mean, it's not going to be like that, but, you know, just there's lots of possibilities here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as the clip mentioned, you know, number one, part of this pledge and part of this funding was to ensure that it stays in the public realm forever. So, no mayor after me can change their mind or privatize it or anything like that. But number one, and even that was not a guarantee pre this. So that's a net benefit, of course, to our community, that it will stay in the public good forever. And then second to that, absolutely, we've got $2 million to reinvest into Bay Bluffs Park and get it open in some way. I have pledged to the community. And I'll give you an inside look at my conversations in the building right now. I don't care if all we have is a notepad and a pen. We are having a meeting in October about Bay Bluffs Park. You know, so whether, because we've all been waiting, and I understand the impatience, and, you know, lots of time that's rooted in misunderstanding of how hard we've been working to make this happen, or that we had already received funding. But, you know, we had an 8-month delay between some state agencies that had nothing to do with us. We weren't dragging our feet. We were ready to go. And so I certainly understand the impatience. I would be impatient, too. I am impatient, too, about getting something going. And so if nothing else, next month we will have kind of that kickoff kind of listening session. We aren't going to present anything. We're not going to necessarily say, here's what we're going to do or not do, because we really don't know that yet. But we want to get everybody's ideas down and you know, prepare our engineers, our consultants, our architects with some preloaded with some of this feedback from the community. So I think one important point on this last thing, Andrew, is that, look, $2 million, as I said in the meeting, this is not going to build a community center. Right. This is not, you know, we're going to have to temper the palatial ideas that we may have about what we can do with $2 million. Nothing says that in the future we couldn't get more funding to do more things. But I think what our goal is here is to get this back as a public amenity and do it in the most efficient way that we can. And so I think it's going to be lots of primitive trails, like you said, but that doesn't mean there wouldn't be some place to picnic, some place to have an overlook, you know, those types of things. You know, we're going to just do the best that we can to kind of glue that experience together and make sure that it's not only something you can enjoy now, but something that won't see the same fate in 5 or 10 years that it did since I've been there.
Do we expect there to be a full demolition of the existing boardwalk and stairs, or is some of that going to be salvaged, or is that still to be determined because of cost and like sustainability?
Yeah, I wouldn't say any of that is final, except I can tell you just off the cuff with our building official, and this is of course the decisions that were slapped on my desk unfortunately a couple years ago, which is I think the boardwalks themselves that go down the bluff, those are going to be difficult to keep, just because even if a section of it is good, let's say, I mean, if you go back and read the archives, the articles of what it took to even put those pilings in,
yeah,
40 years ago, I mean, I couldn't even imagine the engineering, the cost with only $2 million So I don't think it would be a realistic expectation to say that there's going to be a large scale raised boardwalk type of feature all the way through the park. Now, I think some of those landings up top are in okay shape. So I think there's some scenarios there where up top, or maybe we build a new kind of lookout that's up top that's ADA compliant, where you can kind of overlook the water, something like that. So keeping and adding on to those kind of street grade pavilions, I think it has a chance, but I don't see any financial feasibility or logistical feasibility of having the same situation that we had before, which is all of those being on raised paths or raised boardwalks.
And as you say, I mean, if it's not the whole thing, you probably can't have any of it, because, you know, it doesn't do much good to have it here and then it's in the middle, there's nothing in there after that. So,
right.
Hey, we're talking to Mayor D.C.
doesn't really help us.
Right. Obviously, you were present when the various religious folks came, the, you know, very conservative churches came and protested the Christmas drag queen show at the Sanger Theater. I heard what Adam Cobb said, that it is both a violation of the contract and at this point it would be a content-based restriction. There would be a violation of the First and 14th Amendment. We've had a lot of conversation about that on the show. But they tell me that they are going to continue. They're going to show back up and protest again because they want to get this thing stopped. Your comments to the community? I know you didn't say a lot on Thursday.
Yeah, well, first of all, anybody can come to any meeting and share anything that they want. And so certainly, you know, every citizen has that right to do it. You know, I sat and, you know, heard all of those arguments, the discussions, you know, some more, I believe, more measured than others. But at the end of the day, we will do what we continue to do, which is at the end of the day, AFM is our operator, and they make nothing comes across my desk or our desk about what should or shouldn't be at the Sanger, nor would that make any sense for city government to be making those decisions, both operationally and constitutionally. So we have an operator that does that, and we continue to defer any critiques, criticisms, questions to them. As a matter of fact, I'll be on a call with the national folks later this week to convey my expectation that you do whatever you want to do, but at the end of the day, this was an ASM decision, whether you like it or you don't like it, and so that needs to be deferred to ASM, and they need to say whatever they want to say. I don't know that it's necessarily fair to put any onus on city government that has absolutely no contractual or constitutional ability to pick winners and losers on what should or shouldn't happen in the Sanger Theater, and give off this false presumption that we have more authority over that than we actually do. So I plan on having that discussion with them later this week as well, and making sure that they are conveying that to our community.
Can we also just clarify one thing? Because one of the arguments I've heard is that, you know, it's my tax dollars that are going for this, some of them will say. And, of course, my response is, well, okay, but, you know, the pagans have tax dollars too. And it's not obvious that the Christians' tax dollars are more important than the pagans' tax dollars. But I have been told that none of that might be relevant because the Sanger actually doesn't receive money. It's a net neutral or even maybe revenues for this. Can you just clarify the money part of it?
Yeah, that's correct. As a matter of fact, yes, it runs at least net neutral, if not receiving revenue. And forget this controversial issue. Take a step back. Why would we be paying an operator to be losing money on this consistently that the taxpayers had to subsidize? You know, we'd probably be looking for another operator. So,
oh, you haven't heard of the Bay Center,
you know,
then?
The whole idea is, well, yeah, well, you have to ask them. But the,
sorry, not to jump topics, but, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, but this facility runs at that. It actually, every ticket you buy actually it also is taxpayers, whether you like who the taxpayer is or agree with their beliefs or not, also helps fund a portion of the ticket helps fund capital improvements as well. So you could even go a step further and say, actually, some of the capital improvements that would be quote unquote city taxpayer dollars are being generated by anybody who buys a ticket. Not necessarily the other way around, where city taxpayer dollars are going in to fund capital improvement. So there's really two layers of ultimately the user is helping fund whatever ticket, whatever religion, whatever belief you have, whoever's buying a ticket to whatever show, whether it's a comedy or it's anything, those dollars are going to actually help with a capital fund for improvements of the same.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about, and pardon me, but I was listening to the city council meeting and then the discussion of the pallet shelters and the deal and the how long in the deal and what the revenue limits were and, you know, charging people for occupancy and all of that stuff. I guess I hadn't really thought it through. I had been operating under the impression that the agencies that were going to be using the pallet shelters were just going to be providing them for people, that it wasn't. But I can see why they would charge. Okay, there's all kinds of elements there. But how will the money work? You know, the city owns them. The entities like Reentry Alliance and Offensive are then going to kind of oversee them. But the people using them are going to pay them like a daily rent. How does the money work?
So very customary in low barrier shelters and in other homeless eviction initiatives. It is more common than not that, think about the pallet shelter in terms of the phases of getting someone off the street. The pallet shelter is not where you go the first night you come off the street, right? There's other facilities that you would be going to, other parts of these same facilities that you'd be going to as you enter into the program.
Okay, so that's, it's not intake. It's not low barrier shelter replacement. Okay, I got you. Go ahead.
But what it is it's inventory replacement to allow more capacity for people to come in, because the idea of pallet shelters is you're starting to get independence. You have a case manager, someone that's helping you get a job, okay, all of that. So it's really, it's more about accountability than it is about revenue. It's kind of say, hey, you've been here 3-4 months. This isn't meant for you to be here for a year. But the idea is you've been working with your case manager. We've got you on your feet. You now have a job. And part of the accountability of having a job is you might pay $5 a night, or you might pay $3 a night. And because the idea is getting you ready to go back into out of the shelter and back into the world where you're going to be accountable to rent and things like that. So that's not unique to these two programs. It is very, very common with any type of multi-step case management and or homeless reduction approach to handle it that way. So
okay.
I know that some, for people who don't follow that closely, I've got several questions about that. Like, well, why would you charge somebody who is? Well, remember, this is the phase two. This is, we've gotten you on your feet. And again, these are truly meant to be transitional. They don't have a bathroom in them. They're 70 square feet.
Right.
I mean, it's a bed, it's an air conditioner, it's got a roof over your head. So it gives these folks some independence now that they've kind of got on their feet a little bit. But these are not designed for you to be staying in for 6 months or a year.
And I know that's
still transitional housing.
Yeah, that's how I had originally thought of them, as this is the low barrier shelter option. You can't put somebody in the general population of the shelter, so you put them in here. And to understand that that's not what they're designed for, I appreciate that clarification. I guess the one thing that I wondered about was, if the city owns and is leasing to these entities with all kinds of controls and limits, and they're revenueing off of them, it just seems like an odd arrangement for them to be revenueing off of it if they do, and why would the city not get a share of that revenue? But I'm sure their cost to operate is...
Well, generally, Andrew, on that, it's easy to explain. On that, the amount of money to case manage this and to operate these facilities is multi-millions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
Whatever revenue would come off any of these would be a fraction of a fraction of what it takes to actually run them. It's almost like a community center. If you rent a community center in the city for $100 or $50 or whatever, that doesn't pay our light bill. That doesn't pay our air conditioning bill. You know, I mean, it's more of just, hey, this helps offset some costs. There's no world in which either of these organizations are going to be, quote unquote, profiting off of any type of revenue there.
That makes sense.
Only going to help feed services. And they're by the way, they are required as part of having these pallet shelters to have case management and to have wraparound services available as well.
Makes sense. And as you say, it's really designed more as a benefit to the user to have this accountability than it is as a revenue stream. So I appreciate that. We always, a great day. I mean, you had a lot of wins at city council. You know, trees are getting planted, the Bay Bluffs, the, land development code updates, the spending cap. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened, and the pallet shelters. I thought that, you know, they yayed a couple of times, and I thought they should have even yayed a little bit more. All right, a couple of lighter topics, the lightning round. Does Mayor D.C. Reeves make his bed every single day?
With some assistance.
The bed gets made, is that the way you want to say
yes,
it?
Right, it might be a 80-20 Sydney split. Sydney, DC, but does it get made? The answer is yes.
All right, very good. Do you make corn on the cob? Are you the cook who cooks corn on the cob? If so, what's your method?
I'm just a classic, give me a big pot and boil.
Salt, sugar, butter, lemon juice, anything in the water?
I don't eat mayonnaise. I don't want anything crazy. Just, give me some butter and salt. I'm pretty vanilla like that.
And is there any ordinary thing in the world that still just kind of amazes you? Examples I use were things like, I think aluminum foil is amazing. And I think, the ordinary pencil is kind of amazing. Is there any technology, even if it's light technology, that you look at and kind of like, wow, that's kind of wild?
That's a big one. I can't think of any. I did use some aluminum foil last night, and it didn't amaze me quite to the level of you. So one that doesn't amaze me. doesn't amaze me that much in 2025.
I can look at almost anything and be fascinated by it. So,
well, I'd assume you're setting me up to say how amazing the red light camera technology that we have is.
There was no setup involved whatsoever. And we didn't even get to talk about the noise cameras that New York City is installing that can, give a ticket out on the basis of hearing the noise violation from the car going by. But I'm sure Councilwoman Patton will be all over that as soon as she finds out about it. Mayor D.C. Reeves, as always, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week, sir.
All right. Thank you.